Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to Funk Jazz Cafe creator Jason Orr. He is celebrating 25 years of the iconic brand and is here to chat about that and more. I'll also share the second half of my exclusive interview with Saints and Sinners star Clifton Powell. He opens up about colorism in Hollywood and his character Rex Fisher. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
The producers of the Aretha Franklin biopic, Respect, are looking for a young girl to portray the Queen of Soul. The actress must be an African-American girl who can play between the ages of 10 to 14. She must also be very charismatic and must sing well. Piano playing is a plus. If this is your daughter, please submit her online audition to castedtalent.com/respect. In other related entertainment news, check out the trailer for the new film, Don't Let Go, at WCLK.com. David Oyelowo plays Detective Jack Radcliffe, who gets a shocking phone call from his recently murdered niece, Ashley, played by Storm Reid. Working together across time, they race to solve her murder before it can happen. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from Life Lux Jazz, November 7th through the 11th on the beaches of Los Cabos, Mexico. This year's festival lineup includes Incognito, Mesa, Kirk Whalum, Gerald Albright, and more. In addition to the music, there will also be health and wellness activities, a Spirit of Jazz brunch, and Sunset Cruise. Information is available at LifeLuxJazz.com. That's LifeLuxeJazz.com.
What's happening? This is Aldis Hodge, star of Showtime's City on the Hill, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius on WCOK 91.9, Atlanta's Jazz Station.
You just heard Atlanta's own Avery Sunshine performing I've Got Sunshine. She is just one of the many voices heard over the years during the Funk Jazz Cafe. Now in its 25th year, the Music and Arts Festival is back for another round of soulful, magical, and once-in-a-lifetime performances. I caught up with the creator, Jason Orr, to chat about this great Atlanta tradition.
Jason Orr, welcome to Up Front.
I finally made it to Up Front. I was trying to get enough work in my cachet to say I do this, and this.
Yeah, you've been all around the world, and you finally make it to the show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I made it, man.
Yeah. You can call your mom now.
I can call my mom, say, Mom.
25 years. 25 this is the 25th years. Anniversary.
A quarter of a century.
Yeah, of the Funk Jazz Cafe Art and Music Festival.
Yes.
And I'm so super happy to have you here in the studio to talk about this amazing event. This is it. Well, in terms of...
We're moving, we're evolving.
Okay.
This is one of the steps to something else.
Okay.
You know, we've already evolved into film with Funk Jazz Cafe Diary of a Decade. That's an award-winning documentary film.
Right.
We've already evolved into FJK Documentary Film Festival and Music Conference, which evolved from the film.
Okay.
And dealing with that documentary space and want to... create a platform for other documentarians.
Okay.
And storytelling in Atlanta. And, you know, that's important. So I'm looking at Funk Jazz Cafe Festival cruises, you know, Funk Jazz Cafe at Sea. I think the demographic that appeals to our brand would find that, you know, appealing. You know, they have disposable income. They like to have a good time and a cultural good time.
Yeah.
You know, not a kitty good time.
Let's, if we can, let's go back to the very beginning. What was the impetus of doing this? Why did you create Funk Jazz Cafe?
Couple of reasons. One was because my creative arts community was so stacked with a variety of talents, you know, whether it was, you know, spoken word artists to independent filmmakers to fashion designers, pattern makers, pottery artists, sculpturists, you know, visual artists that work with, you know, acrylics or water paints even, and culinary artists, just all kind of artists were in my environment. And I didn't see a place where we can all hang out and talk jive and slap five, you know what I'm saying?
So that's you create.
That's one. Yeah. That's one. Yeah. And the other reason I read a magazine called Musician Magazine called that said on the cover, as I put in Funk Jazz Cafe Diary of a Decade in the movie, it said the end of the music business as we know it. And the reason was based on this new thing called facsimile transmission, which is we call the internet. They didn't even have a name for it back then. You know, and I just thought to myself, like, what kind of music environment would we be in if this facsimile transmission was available to everybody? What would that do for, you know, phone communication? What would that do? And if the phone communication advanced, what would it do with music? How would we share music? You know, would we share music? Would we still be burning CDs? You know, that type of thing. And then if we weren't burning CDs, and most of the music business make a good bulk of their money, if it's not publishing, it's off the hardware. You know, though, you remember they used to charge us $19 for those long CD cases for something that was less than a dollar to manufacture.
Yeah.
You know, so it was hand over fist money and end up imploding on itself. As I was saying to Jamal, he remembers back then, I was telling everybody that the music business was going to crash. It's going to implode on itself. And it did. It took 10 more years because that was 1994. The business didn't really hit that until 2004. You know what I mean? Or around 2001. But really, retail disappeared around 2004. You know what I'm saying? Where overnight, if you can remember, like what happened to Tower Records? You know,
right.
It wasn't
like
their sales were dwindling. They just closed, you know, and almost that was Peppermint Records. That was almost every Sam Goody's. You know, it was every little record store you can imagine, unless you were a boutique record store that was selling other things other than music, like Moods Music.
Right.
So, you know, those two things, I said, OK, I saw those things coming together. And I also saw the evaporation of live bands. And I wanted to preserve that culture, you know, because we come from a rich culture of live bands. Brick, mm-hmm. Slave, mm-hmm. Cameo, Confunction, the Crusaders.
Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah. The Wu-Tang. No, just kidding. But all of those bands, almost down to none, you know. Even today, look, you know, the most popular band is The Roots, and they're on The Tonight Show. That sustains them. You know, so I wanted to create something that could be a platform for all of these other artists. As you see in our coffee table book, there are just groups on groups on groups that aren't as popular as the Janelle Monáes and the Public Enemies and Erykah Badus, but that were just important, just as important. Joy Gilliam is just as important. She was even in Lucy Pearl and sang behind D'Angelo and Outkast, and, you know, still, I feel that she isn't recognized in the light that she should be. Dion Ferris is another, you know. It's just so many talents.
And let me tell you, I'm looking at this book, and this really brings back a lot of memories. And it's funny you mentioned Dion Ferris, because when the last time I had her here on the show, we talked about probably one of my most memorable funk jazz performances. One that always stands out was the night that I'll never forget it. She was in a white outfit. She had her hair out, and she was performing
Passion.
And then she went into this whole Sea Lion Woman thing, yep. And Joy Somerville came on with the trumpet. And that was, I've never experienced a night like that where that was pure magic. I mean, it really was something that was unfolding right in front of you,
yeah.
That you were like, this will never happen again.
That's right.
And it's never happened again.
That's why I created it. I wanted a platform for magic. And fortunately, we had a lot of magic.
Yeah.
A lot of magical things happened. And those things inspired me and fueled me to continue to do it, you know?
Speaking of magic, where did the idea of not telling the audience and those that would be attending the show who was going to be performing at the event, where did that idea come from of not letting? And here's the thing. people came anyway, not knowing who they were going to, you know, see that night, not knowing who was going to perform, not knowing how many acts would perform. So where that idea come from?
It came out of the same reasons that I just explained why I created it. These people, you know, they're people who are used to being fed information and talent in the usual traditional pipelines, TV, print, radio. And then there was this group that was coming together that actually was searching for what their tastes were, you know. That was, and so that group, I was in that group, you know. I wanted to discover new things. I wanted to see new things. So we needed a platform for it. And I knew that if in the traditional concert space, if you say Ray Cobb is going to come and do his number one hit, everybody that opens before that, you know, people overlook them. You know, it's like, well, when's Ray coming on? Or, for example, there was a show that Erykah Badu did one show. So the next time, the next Funk Jazz Cafe, people literally came early so that they can get to the front of the stage, and they folded their arms up. And I was like, why your arms fold? And they was like, what time Erykah coming on? And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a minute. She was here the last time.
Right, right.
What make you think she'll be here this time?
Right.
And then why are you so feeling so entitled, you know what I mean, that I'm supposed to get you Erykah Badu every time? You know, so, you know, I wanted to, as you see, some groups in there, Larnay Wilkerson, Voodoo Einstein.
I mean, this is really just
Zoo Man. Bone Crusher and them was in a group called the Lyrical Giants.
Yeah.
You know, we just wanted to expose what
Gordon
was new.
Gordon Chambers is in here. Raphael Sadiq.
Vinks.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That was probably the first time I'd ever.
George Howard.
Yeah.
You know.
That was my first time ever hearing of Vinks was at a Funk Jazz.
Really?
Yeah.
And so that's why. That's Ray, you're saying it all. You know, you're coming up with every, I don't have to answer these things. Those are the reasons why, you know, so that you can come and discover something new.
One more question for you. Let's talk about, we mentioned Diary of a Decorate. Of a decade, I'm sorry. But then you also had another film, the Maynard film, that you were a producer on, and that experience, which I got a chance to see that amazing story of how this man really transformed the city of Atlanta. What was it about that about him, I should say, that made you want to be a part of that project?
Good question. The cultural preservation part, the cultural innovation part, the cultural education part, cultural sustainability part that I say Funk Jazz Cafe is. You know, and I am Funk Jazz Cafe. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So in terms of me evolving, knowing that I'm going to be, you know, doing movies on our great cultural and musical icons, that was an opportunity to do a cultural, political icon, you know, that turned a country town into an international city. You know, the racist capital of the South, you know, what he did helped contribute to making this the Black Mecca as we know it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And this beautiful environment that we live in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, a lot of it. And a lot of times I drive around and I say, man, if Maynard could see this city now.
Thank you, Jason Orr. Check out the full unedited version of my conversation with him at WCLK.com.
Support for WCLK programming comes from We Are Live Entertainment, presenting A Night of Class with vocalist Dionne Warwick on Friday, August 23rd at 8 p.m. at the Fox Theater. Miss Warwick will be accompanied by a full orchestra. The evening will also feature Peebo Bryson and Denise Williams. Ticket information is available at foxtheater.org.
Listen as your day unfolds, challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be.
I'm Niecy Nash.
I'm Karrueche Tran.
And you are listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment is the conclusion to my one-on-one interview with Clifton Powell.
So how did you, and it was something that you were talking about and when you said the issues of colorism, how were you able to get past that? Because again, I'm looking at your list of all of these iconic films, and we say your name and people are like, oh yeah, 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 this character or that character.
Man, you know what I like about you is because you do your research. And I like when an interviewer is intelligent and asks intelligent questions, because some people have never asked me about the color. I've said this statement several times. Oftentimes, I don't talk about it. If I talk about all the sexual stuff in Hollywood, not just from men, but from women, if I talk about all the color stuff, people going to be calling me. Like, I called out Spike Lee. Spike know why I called him out. Spike ain't pay people. He disrespected people. So now you're talking about Tyler Perry? But let me tell you what happened. I ran into Tyler Perry, and Spike went and talked to him, because Spike knows I'm telling the truth. It got kind of turned around because I was just playing around. I was at Russ Parr's studio. I was like, I'll be Spike Lee, man. I was just joking. I didn't know things went viral. So then I had to stay with it because I really did not care for Spike. I don't care for no Negroes who get to a certain level and forgot what they did to get there. And then they start pooping on other African-Americans who are trying to get there and take it to the crossover media. That's what I was trying to say. I don't like that. I come out of the 60s. If I got a problem with Tyler Perry, I'm going to drive down or fly down or walk down and sit down and talk with him. And I'm not going to take it to the crossover media and blast him. So just so people understand, because I said that, it turned into a firestorm. Negroes was calling me, you C-list actor. I'm like, let me tell you something. I can handle it. Negroes ain't bothering me. I'm good. For all the work I did, I'm collecting a multi-million dollar pension. I'm good. So you can kiss my black, shiny butt. But it prompted Spike to have to go talk to Tyler and them working it out. So there's a level of respect that we keep in the public. If people are hearing me, there's a level of respect as African Americans that we have to keep in the public and keep it away from the man, and not cross it over, keep it away from the crossover press and go berate your brother or your sister in public like that. So that's what I was trying to say. You know, so I don't talk often about colorism or some of the sexual things that have been put in my face or some of the moves that I had to make it in this business. Colorism is real. But when you talk about it, people are like, oh, now you're playing a race card. Well, there's an article in, I'm not sure if it's Esquire magazine, called Black Hollywood, back in the 90s, called Black Hollywood, White Hollywood. Wesley Snipes, white agent. Go read it. Do your research, black folks. Stop pointing fingers. Go do your research. I read an article yesterday on IG that said black people do not read. I'm not going to make that total blanket statement, but we got to start reading and doing research. Stop coming. I'm going to tell them now. I'm going to tell everybody now. Stop coming to my IG page talking about I play rapists. I only play one person that hurt a girl in a movie, and that was Women Aren't Loose. I was the last person for that movie. The star dropped out, and they called me at the last minute. Reuben Cannon, who cast me in Why Do Fools Fall in Love, Buffalo Soldiers, and one other movie, Selma, Lord Selma, called me at the final hour and asked me to come. I never even read the script. When I read the script, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. He said, Cliff, I need you. I said, I tell you what, then let's take out the part where I got to touch that little girl. So I don't just run out and play rapist. I got a daughter, but I'm an actor. And so know the research, do your research. And know, I play a plethora of characters. And black people are just taking it so personal, so I'm addressing it because I have feelings like everybody else. Don't come to my page talking a bunch of SHI, because I'm not having it. So if you do your reading, there's an article called Black Hollywood, White Hollywood, where Wesley Snipes, CAA white agent, said, I sent Wesley in for a role, and they called me and said, don't send no NIGGAs darker than Denzel. And then you need to read the but this is back in the '90s. Man, I did a speaking thing the other day for Conscious Content with AZ, her writing program, Bridge 17. And I said, guys, man, what a great time to be African-American in this business. I never thought I would live to see the day. It is not anything like it was. It's 55 outlets. It's black folks with hair like yours and hair like hers and dark-skinned black women in the leads. And, oh, it's just beautiful. And you got so many wonderful shows, Black Lightning, Queen Sugar, Power, Empire, and the list goes on and on. Panther just rocked the world. So it's a good time for young people, but we gotta stay vigilant, because then we'll lose it, you know. So I don't talk about it because it'll cause a firestorm, and then people, he's bitter, and I ain't bitter. God, I mean, I landed in the middle. The middle is not a bad place to be in Hollywood.
Let's get into your character on Saints and Sinners, Rex Fisher.
Man, I
Rex
need a break Fisher. With you asking me all these deep-ass questions, man. Hey, man, I mean, yeah, go ahead.
We're in season four. I mean, what can we, you know, how are you approaching him this new season?
Man, the same as I did last season, so I don't mess my checks up. Now that I'm Clifton Powell, I got even more responsibility. No, you know, when you play a character like Rex Fisher, so Saints and Sinners is a kind of spinoff, so to speak, from Russ Parr's The Under Shepherd. So if anybody have never seen The Under Shepherd, go watch it. It is a really interesting movie. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Washington is just a crazy beast in that movie, right? So in The Under Shepherd, I played a pastor that couldn't preach, which was hard for me because I can preach. So Russ was like, man, you can't preach. So if you saw The Under Shepherd, I'm preaching, but it's really bad. So when they called for Saints and Sinners, they said, we're going to turn you into this guy named Rex Fisher, who's like almost like a Cuddy. So that's really the base of Rex Fisher. And people are like, well, how did you come up with Cuddy? Well, I was in the Bronx after they had somebody else in mind for Cuddy. Mm. Just like King. And I came in, they wanted me to read for Spider. I'm going to go back to your question. I want people to really, since you're not going to read it or you're going to try to read it, I'm going to give you all the background so you can stop making stupid comments. They had a star name in mind for Cuddy. It was hot as hell in L.A. I had a wool suit. I stopped at a thrift store and got me a Dobb hat. I memorized Cuddy that night. I called my manager. She said, no, you're not going to be able to read for Cuddy. They got a star name. I was reading for Cowboy, for Spider. And I was going to read for Cuddy. So for Spider, I had an eye patch. For Cowboy, I had a cowboy hat. So I went in, I had my eye patch. I did Spider. Spider had one line. Shut up. That's it. Thank you. Then I went to the bathroom. I put my cowboy hat on. Came back. And I did Cowboy like Cowboy. Hey, baby, blah, blah, blah. I said, thank you. That's good. So I saw the Hughes Brothers. You asked me. I couldn't tell which one it was. I said, listen, man, can I read Cuddy? They were like, nah, bro, we got a star name for Cuddy. I said, come on, man, let me just read Cuddy. They said, like, no, we have a star name for Cuddy. So I was sitting there. I said, bro, I'm here now, and we're going to get to your question. Mm-hmm. So just
No, you're good.
But I want to give people with an interview as wonderful as this the real background, because we got to start giving these millennials a little bit more so they can really appreciate the struggle. So finally they stared at me and said, okay, do Cuddy. And I did Cuddy just like you saw it on the screen. And I don't know where I came up with that voice. So then when I was in the scene, sitting in the Bronx, it was 99,000 below zero in the car, and I had a lollipop in my pocket from lunch, and I started sucking on a lollipop, and I put the voice and said, hey, baby girl. That's how Cuddy came about. Rex Fisher, if you notice, the voice is an offshoot really of Cuddy, and it's really harder for me to play Rex Fisher than it is to play Pinky. Because my personality is more stupid like Pinky, as you can tell. I grew up capping on people and joning. And if I had my druthers, I'd go to the casino, watch the game, go have a drink with the fellas and just have a good time with my kids and my girl and my family and just not worry about being any kind of celebrity. That's my personality. So Cuddy slash Rex Fisher, it's a little hard sometimes to do some of the tough guy stuff that he does, you know? And that's when my training comes in.
And it's crazy because I was talking with my good friend Ro Scott over at WABE. We love the show. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, you know, we know that Rex is so in love with Ella. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's that other side of Rex that almost makes us not realize that, you know, he's kind of a bad guy, but then there's
a bad guy. will you stop being so nice?
But there's that side.
Rex is a gangster.
Yeah, he is.
And
he
let me just interject since you went there.
Yeah.
For actors out there, I watch gangster movies. So I went in for a movie called John Singleton's, which I love. My friend John, who's gone, but God rest his soul, brought me in for everything he thought I was right for. So I went in for Three Brothers. Remember that? And they,
I think so.
They, remember about the black guys and white brothers and they was foster care?
Yeah.
So they wanted me to play the gangster. So I said, well, you know, if I play him, you know, he'd probably go to PTA meetings, live out in the suburbs, maybe have a girlfriend or wife. And, you know, and the director looked at me and said, really? What kind of redeeming qualities would this guy have? He's a thug and a gangster. I said, did you see The Godfather? Where Al Pacino was in church and had ordered hits on everybody that went against his daddy. I said, so when we play African-American gangsters, we play them one-dimensionally. So I've already approached them about season 5, 6, 7, 8, if it comes, about opening Rex up so we can start to see gangsters, they all like beautiful women. They want to be in love. They all have a soft side. You know, so we're developing, seeing, you know, this gangster.
Yeah.
You know, who may evolve into something different. You know?
And we see that you, I mean, because we were saying on last night, it was like he loves Ella, and you see that. Yeah, we see it in your face. We see it when you're around her. Yeah. You know, it's like he's putty in her hand. So yeah.
Wait till y'all keep watching and find out what really happens between me and Lady Ella and some of the secrets that are going to come out. It's amazingly juicy.
Thank you, Clifton Powell, for that exclusive interview. Watch the full conversation this Sunday evening on CAU TV, Comcast 23, or on my YouTube channel, Ray Cornelius TV, at 8:30 p.m., followed by Saints and Sinners on Bounce TV at 9 p.m. Well, that'll do it for this weekend's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Jason Orr and Clifton Powell. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, August 10th, for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.